también llegó a la Corte Interamericana de Derechos Humanos por los mismos hechos. Es decir, de 5 casos que han llegado a la Corte Interamericana de Derechos Humanos, 4 de ellos tienen que ver con abusos cometidos por integrantes del ejército y falta de acceso a la justicia. Entonces me parece imprudente, por decirlo menos, que el presidente Calderón no haga un reconocimiento público, claro, contundente, en el sentido de que los abusos contra los derechos humanos por parte del ejército mexicano existen, que no son aislados y que la impunidad es la regla detrás de ellos.
Acaban de escuchar a Alberto Herrera, director ejecutivo de Amnistía Internacional México. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Gracias por su atención. Y ahora, en inglés, la programa se llama Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. That's going to be for the next 2 hours in English, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Spanish translations are welcome, so venga al estudio, and we will traducir if any translators want to be translating, but that hasn't happened yet. So, welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, the June 3rd edition. I think we're at June 3rd. If we're not at June 4th, it's a Thursday anyway. I know that. And stay tuned.
Who owns the land? Who your presence raises a question. Who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide. Where is hope? Ecocide, genocide. Where is hope? Ecocide, genocide. Where is hope? Ecocide, genocide. Where is
hope? And that was an old favorite, Land by 15. Off the Houseless Collection, Volume 1, by Skidmark Bob, who's back with us on Tuesday afternoons. In case you wondered where he's been, he's back at the same old stand. And I'm here at the same old stand. I'll be with you for 2 hours. My name is Robert. The name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And we're at 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, in case you haven't noticed. And the phone number here, in case you wish to get involved or jump on board, is 427-3772, 831-427-3772. We have a second number, too, but unless the first number gets filled up, why bother with the second one? 427-3772. There is a number to call off-air, easier to remember, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is also the acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights group that I'm watching fade into the distance, but doing some work with still. 423-HUFF if you want to reach me off-air. And you may want to talk about stuff. You may want to be on the show. You may want to, who knows what, pass on some information, large checks. If you have checks for Free Radio Santa Cruz or equipment, there is a voicemail line. You can also leave public service announcements on that line. And that number, boy, you need a pencil. So as Kerbugger Chris often says when he's my co-host on the show, unfortunately not today, grab your pencils and we'll try those numbers again. And hopefully you'll have your pencil soon, and you'll be able to write down these numbers in case you want to. The message phone for Free Radio, in case you want to donate or put in comments or have public service announcements, or perhaps you want to join up and you want more information, it's 427-4523, 427-4523. And you can also get involved by going to the website where we stream, freakradio.org. Freakradio, one word, small letters, .org. And just download an application, download information. I believe there's a schedule there. I'm not sure if it's completely updated, but it's probably pretty accurate. And you can also, as I said, call in at 427-3772, 427-3772. Off-air number for me, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. So, though we don't have Kerbugger Chris in the studio, we do have him on the streets giving us all the dope, or some of it anyway. And he's no dope, so let's hear what he has to say, and we'll go into some of the street interviews, which have been woefully lacking in the last few shows. There may be a guest coming into the studio, I'm hoping, Steve of the Downtown Dialogues, one of the main organizers of the 3 days of dialogues that invited but didn't get too successful attendance from the downtown merchants and from the right-wing elements in town. And the Sentinel-type ranters, although we did have a Sentinel reporter, Shanna the police poodle McCord, at our meeting. I like Shanna, by the way, even though I use that kind of description of her, because she's a nice person. Unfortunately, her writing tends to be slanted very distinctly in a certain direction at the Sentinel. Hence, I call the Sentinel the urinal, or perhaps the Sent-anal, another way of describing our so-called daily newspaper. Anyway, Steve, who helped put together the Downtown Dialogues with a couple of other mediators and held 3 different days of dialogues, I ran into him at the Sub Rosa at the weekly HUFF meeting. We actually had a kind of a mini meeting on Wednesday. Usually HUFF meets Wednesday 10:30 at the Sub Rosa, but I've been kind of holding off on meetings until hearing from the popular demand that there be a meeting, or even a few people who want to have a meeting. If you want to get in touch with HUFF, you certainly can, and I encourage you, if you've got some issues you want to raise around civil rights for poor and homeless people, if you've been hassled and you want to report about it, you, of course, can call Free Radio directly, and that's a good thing to do, too. You can go to indybay.org, indybay.org, which is sort of a blog news group which posts stories, and you can post your account there, and a number of people have more recently, and that's always good. There's a notebook at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific on Copwatch. You can write down what you've observed or suffered or whatever, at the hands of our local police, rangers, hosts, private security guards, you name it. That's at the Sub Rosa at 703 Pacific, the Copwatch Notebook. And so hopefully Steve will come rolling in. I haven't got his email here, so I haven't heard back from him, but he did help to organize, actually, he was one of the main organizers of this event, so maybe we'll hear from him, and maybe he'll be in the studio. On Sunday, we've got a couple of guests who will be calling in. One of them is Mike Rhodes, who regular listeners know is of the articulate and skilled Community Alliance publisher and activist in Fresno, who helped to put together, or I should say to inspire with his daughter Simone, the Kincaid lawsuit, named after the late Pam Kincaid. This was the lawsuit that won $2.3 million for homeless people in Fresno and required local authorities to stop throwing away their property. Not too sure that decision is being closely respected, but it is on the books. It was persuaded by, I should say, put into writing by a federal judge. Name is Wanger. And it's on the books. And so, in a way, it's persuasive precedent for us here in Santa Cruz if we want to hold old John Wallace, chief ranger, and also in the minds of some chief harasser, to task for the depredations of his cleanup crews, which run around cleaning up homeless property and despoiling homeless people of their possessions if they're found in campsites in the Poganip. Purportedly, he posts a little note on the campsite saying, "Be gone," and then returns 3 or 4 days later and just destroys everything. In fact, you're supposed to store property for 90 days under state law, and under federal protection of, it's the Fifth Amendment, it's the right to be free from seizure, maybe it's the Fourth Amendment, searches and seizures of your property. In any case, it's not respected in Santa Cruz. Too much trouble, confided John Wallace when I talked to him about it 3 or 4 years ago when we were in his office. And one hopes we can get him into a bit of trouble for that kind of harsh and essentially dehumanizing decision for a whole mass of people, 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz. None of them have any protection of the law, according to John Wallace, if his forces decide to seize property that they find at a person's campsite. Ah, but it's an illegal campsite, you'll say. Yes, but sleeping is everywhere illegal in Santa Cruz outdoors. Hence, for homeless people who have no indoors places to go, except for a shelter system that serves less than 60 or 70 people, and I'm being very generous, it's probably more like 20 or 30. I'm not entirely clear of the exact number at this point in the Paul Lee Loft and elsewhere, but that, as I understand it, is all neither here nor there, because it's not walk-in emergency shelter where you can walk in and get there tonight, or could have gotten there tonight if you showed up by 4 o'clock. No, it's zero shelter. You have to be on a waiting list. So for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz, as I endlessly repeat, there's no legal place to go. And so if you are ticketed for sleeping or harassed for sleeping, it's just a straight form of abuse, which our mayor, Mike Rodkin, and our upcoming mayor, soon to be mayor, and likely Ryan Coonerty, who's currently vice mayor, finds just perfectly okay. Your property can be seized, and you can be subjected to prosecution in court for criminal sleeping. There's a whole bunch of those crazy laws in Santa Cruz. And we're going to hear now some interviews, which will probably involve people describing citations they've gotten for those laws. If you've had any problems you want to talk about, or you find yourself in a disagreement with what I'm saying, thinking that perhaps these laws are hunky-dory, okey-dokey, and a good thing to have to deal with the criminal element in Santa Cruz, please call in. Let's talk. Let's go now to some street interviews.
About an hour ago?
Yeah, Sergeant Harms, Officer Winston, and the new...
Let me actually begin this at the beginning here.
...3:30 on
Monday, Tuesday, the 1st. And, Chris, you say there was a ticketing blitz happening about an hour ago?
Yeah, Sergeant Sergeant Harms, Officer Winston, and the new guy whose name I haven't quite caught yet, but a little bald new guy, and they were out here working as a group, and it really went up my ass sideways because, like, right over there by New Leaf, there was a kid that's a known quantity out here, and you know, everybody knows him. The cops know him by first name basis. You know, he's a local, and he had his dog with him, okay? And he had his dog, he was sitting up against the wall, and he had his dog laying right beside him. Now, I thought he got a sitting ticket because that's an illegal spot to sit. But when I tracked him down, he said, no, they didn't give me a sitting ticket. They gave him a ticket because he has eaten a sandwich. He had laid down the leash to eat the sandwich. So his dog is technically off-leash because the leash is not in the kid's fucking hand, even though the dog is literally laying pressed up against the kid.
This was on Soquel, the side street.
Right there by New Leaf.
Actually, it's illegal to actually be on the side streets, even with a dog on or off a leash, under the old law, which is still law.
Right, which they are not enforcing, and they are at least acknowledging that much. They know that they can't really go, that genie's out of the bottle now at this point. I mean, it would be selective persecution. But they are selectively persecuting this kid. They are convinced that he's a big-time pot dealer. He's not, okay? They're convinced he's trouble. He's not. He's one of the best kids out here, as far as, and I'm not a big one on the youth, man. I have a big problem with young people. You know, we grade against each other sometime, and I judge him very harshly. This kid's a good kid, okay? He's not a thief. He's an honest kid, and he's clean. He's tight. He's, you know, he's everything that you could want out of a street kid, and yet they still are insistent on persecuting. I've watched him get 3 tickets in 2 days. You know what I mean? One for standing. Apparently, you can't stand for over a certain amount of time, even next to the borders, because the cop told him he was loitering. If he was standing there for more than 15
minutes. There's no anti-loitering law in Santa Cruz, except in parking lots and garages.
They made him move along anyway for that. They told him the kid under no circumstances could stand there. I happened to be standing with him, so I was forced to move along as well. And,
well, you could have said, no, I'm not moving along. I'm just standing here. I come back in an hour and we'll talk some more, or, you know.
Right. Yeah,
actually, call your sergeant and show me what law you're talking about. There's no.
It's this new bald guy, and the problem with it is that they didn't team these cats up with, like, known quantities down here. What they do is they give them a brochure and just send them out here blind. So I've actually had the ridiculous, hysterical thing where I'll have a cop standing over there by motive, and he'll be sitting there trying to count the squares to see if I'm legal. Even though, of course, he could have just asked me and I would have told him I'm legal because I'm local. I know, you know, I know whether I'm legal or not. I mean, I know when I'm in violation. So they're sitting there trying to puzzle these stupid arcane laws. And you can almost see the look on their face, like they're scratching their head, you know, going through all the list of rules that this guy's supposed to enforce on me. And they almost can't even figure it out. I mean, they really have to be, like, walked through it. And until then, we're going to get a lot of mistakes, I think. I think if they're just going to throw these new guys out here and say, here's the list of rules, patrol, I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of people getting tickets for stuff that's legal.
Hopefully some nice false arrest lawsuits that could cost them an arm and a leg and result in some real changes, but that takes many years usually, or a number of years.
Yeah, it takes time. It takes time. There's no doubt about
that. What other citations were actually issued that you saw? Can you tell me?
Sitting is a huge one. Sergeant Harms issued one for a guy that was sitting on that green thing over there, the one where they moved the railing out 4 inches or whatever.
The green railing.
Right. But I have a feeling, though, that the real target was he was drumming. I think he got...
We're talking about a guy sitting on the railing around the planter next to New Leaf Market, which had previously been one of the 3 or 4 planters downtown left behind in the removal of all the sittable brick planters that used to be on the mall prior to 1989 and the earthquake. But in the new Santa Cruz, they designed this ramrod straight open mall with a lot of the bushes, shrubbery, and curves, all the curves gone, in order, at the essentially at the behest of the police department, in order to allow for easier surveillance of the mall and supposedly greater safety. What you've got, of course, is a sort of a far less unique street, a far less comfortable and friendly street, a far less attractive street. And I guess I can go on forever bemoaning 20 years ago's decisions. But it tends to be important in the sense that it lets us know the kind of mentality we're faced with today, which is even worse, but it sort of came out of that police department mentality.
Ticket for sitting, but he was drumming, and that's what brought the attention. And you know how much Sergeant Harms loves drums.
So
you know,
how many tickets would you estimate happened in the last couple hours? that you saw?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And how, just within the place that I can see, because I haven't left this area.
So it's your usual spot in front of the gap.
I am. I was only able to see this intersection. So as far as the fire truck that way, and then as far as like Alfresco this way, is really about as far as I can see. So
your display device, I'd like to point out, is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 2, is within 12 feet of a building, with perhaps 12 and a half feet. Therefore, in theory, you yourself are in violation, Mr.
Oldtimer. I have been.
And actually, it's okay to have a display device within 10 feet, let's say, provided it's at least 10 feet away from a building. But if you are panhandling specifically and not playing an instrument for donation, then it has to be 14 feet away from a building. And Kerbucker Chris was only 12 feet away.
So I've worked that out with Sergeant Harms, because to push me back the extra 2 feet actually inconveniences the folks getting out of their automobiles. So I've worked something out with him, and
sure,
I don't
you
know.
You and Harms think you can violate the law for your own personal convenience.
I'm sure it's off the record. I'm sure he would deny it to the fucking hilt if he were asked, but I've also worked it out with Winston and the other muckety mucks out here that
you had that, worked it out. When this goes on the air, you're finished with you and your secret deal.
Probably.
Kerbhugger. Chris.
Probably, no doubt. But
cool sunglasses notwithstanding.
Thank you. Those were a gift from a hospitality host, by the way, who no longer could take this fed-up bullshit fucking job, and told him to stick it with less than 2 days' notice and left. So Fran was one of the best people out here. She was a real human being, and she just absolutely despised and hated what they do out here and what she had to do. So
we'll see her downtown again. Ask her to give a call to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we can...
She's a fan. She listens on the internet, by the way. She's not within the local listening area, but she does listen on the internet on a very regular basis, and likes the show quite a bit. Oh, thank you. Likes the show quite a bit. So, but she was always very, very generous to us out here, and is a classic example of how a lot of these hosts, hospitality hosts, are really, really great people. It sucks that they're taking a sucky job, but you'd be surprised how many of them realize that and then quit. So, I mean, Fran's not the first one to leave in disgust at the, and a lot of them just give up actually even trying to break, you know, to bust balls. Like, you got guys like Thomas out here who, man, you got to basically get in his face to get anything out of him. I mean, you got to get up and start screaming at him before he'll enforce shit. You know what I mean? Really. I mean, he'll tell you what the laws are, but he won't call on you, and he won't involve the law if he can absolutely, you know, not do it. You know what I mean? He does a lot he's not supposed to do, like bringing food to CJ on the side streets, because he's still under court order too, by the way, not to come on the mall. So, you know, I mean, he's another one who's, you know, banned from the Pacific Garden Mall, or however that works.
We're going to get you, Kerbucker Chris, one of these days.
I have no doubt that they want me, you know what I mean? I think they're just trying to decide how they're going to handle it. Are they going to go all west on me and jack me up and try that angle, or are they going to just leave well enough alone, figuring it's not worth creating a martyr? So, I think they're kind of tossed up with me, and they don't really know which way they want to go. I'm up for it either way. Like I said, and I've always said this on the radio, I've been very, very clear. I'm not hiding. You know what I mean? I'm right here. I'm a known quantity. Everybody knows me. You know, Officer Harms, Officer Winston, anytime you want me, you know where to come and get me. So, whatever.
There you have it. Life on the Mall, according to Kerbucker Chris.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, we're talking to an observer downtown. Oh, you said something about a Christian downtown.
Yeah, what was it? Saturday evening around 5:30, there was a Christian downtown. He was proselytizing, calling people sinners and Jezebels and whatnot, talking about the Lord and redemption and saying Jesus loves you and all that kind of stuff. And, people were heckling him, and I guess the cops saw that and didn't like that, thought that something was amiss. So he called for backup, and he got backup in the form of two other officers, and then they got a backup of a fifth officer now.
Where was this?
And this was right out in front of O'Neill. So they got five officers standing around and about 60 people standing around, and the guy's going off doing his Christian thing, and the cops come over and talk to him and tell him he's got to take a sign down. He had a sign that said, Jesus loves you.
Well, that's a pretty serious problem, that kind of a sign.
I don't know about that. But anyway, so he had the sign out there. So he gave the sign to his wife, who's filming the whole thing. And everybody's kind of wondering, myself included, like, are the cops here to take him down? Are the cops here to protect him from the crowd of pagan heathens that are not really happy with his message? There's one. There's a cop right now. Anyway, so the boys in blue called for another officer. So I guess now we're up to six officers. And he's down half a block, and he gives them the word to take the Christian down. So they take the Christian down. He doesn't resist. They handcuff him, and they take him away.
What are they accusing him of?
They're accusing him of disturbing the peace.
Was he disturbing the peace?
I don't know that he was disturbing the peace any more than the guy who was right here at the same time, because I walked by this guy to get to that guy.
You're pointing to the New Leaf Corner.
Yeah, the New Leaf Corner, and there's a guy over there, and he's drinking a 40 malt liquor, and he's got those candles, you know, those wax candles, Robert, that you put on your birthday cake for numbers, like the number 2 or the number 3. Anyway, he had 666. He was flashing the devil horns, and he was drunk out of his mind, drinking a 40, and saying obscene things to women walking by. The cops didn't have any problem with him, but they certainly took on the Christian. So I think the new joke in Santa Cruz is, how many cops does it take to take down one Christian? Anyway, so when the cops took the Christian down, me being who I am, there's a noise violation for you. Me being who I am, I had to stand up because most of the people were laughing at the Christian and clapping their hands that the cops took the Christian away.
Right.
And I pointed out to them that he had a First Amendment right, whether you like what he says or not. He has the right as an American to say whatever the hell he wants to, and that these people shouldn't be clapping for the cops. They should be telling the cops that they need to release him and that they are illegally detaining, arresting, and who knows doing what to this man. Once I started explaining that to them, there's a murmur went through the crowd, and people realized that, maybe this isn't that good of a thing.
Yeah, good for you.
And guess what? Maybe sometimes they'll come for one of those folks. And a couple people pointed that out to me, and I told them, well, you know, I'd like to be here to stand up for you too, but chances are I'll be long gone by that time.
You are indeed a traveler over many states.
Yeah. So that's the story about the Christian, Robert. But have you been paying attention to the chemtrails in the sky?
Tell me about the chemtrails in the sky.
Well, they seem to be flying over Westcliff and then hanging an immediate right and starting to spray all along the coast, and then it becomes this big haze which wafts over our city. Anyway, take a look at it next time you're out on Westcliff. I live there every day, so I ride my bike by there every day, and I point this out to certain
folks. It's an artistic approach to the whole sky.
It's an artistic approach to eugenics, is what it's an artistic approach to.
Well, eugenics, you know, is a much neglected science since the successful researches of the 1920s, which led, of course, to Hitler's great experiment.
Right, and the experiment continues. Unfortunately, it's right over our heads. So take a look at it. Look it up on YouTube or wherever you look things up these days, and let's blame Wes.
Wes Modes. I have a big button on that says, let's blame Wes Modes.
Okay, yeah, so, you know, that's the story.
Would you like to identify yourself or your loving fans out there?
No, just another guy on the street.
But those who know his voice know his worth.
Thank you.
So we have a ticketish type criminal.
Before we get to the ticketish type criminal, I have a studio guest here actually came in per his promise, and I'll let him introduce himself. We're talking with...
My name is Steve.
Let's try that again.
My name is Steve.
There we go. That works. We have some peculiar microphones here. It says 3, but I think it's number 2 that you're coming up on. And Steve, you're a man, of course, who's... what is your role in Santa Cruz? What do you do around here?
I do all kinds of things, Robert, but a lot of people know me as somebody who works at the bike church. I've worked there for many years. I do the bookkeeping next door in the people power office for the nonprofit, where it's called the Hub, which also rents to Sub Rosa. So we've been.
So you were the criminal behind the Sub Rosa conspiracy.
Exactly.
Well, now we know who you are. Take note, Take Back Santa Cruz. So the reason I've called you in, of course, is because you mentioned a couple weeks ago you were organizing a project which got some publicity in the Sentinel. Not a lot, but some. And that involved 3 days of so-called downtown dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Describe for me what this was intended to be.
Well, the original idea came because just after May Day, when the Sentinel was printing ridiculous things and people were saying things about Sub Rosa and there was all this heat coming down, the Downtown Business Association invited us to a meeting, but then... which had the police chief and another police spokesperson, and all the city council was there. But they asked us to leave after a few minutes because it seemed that the head of the DTA, a guy named Chip, he wanted us to be there. He invited us, but it seemed like he was getting pressure that they don't pay dues, they're not part of it, and so they asked us to leave. So we had the idea.
Who actually asked you to leave?
Well, he did.
Chip did.
Yeah, but it was like we were there for a half hour or so, and we heard the police give their statement, and then...
The issue has to do, for those who don't know, with the a sudden hysteria that has gripped the town or some parts of the town regarding, I don't know, broken windows of what I saw to be 8 to 10 businesses that have now all been replaced. But Sentinel claimed it was 18 businesses by probably 5 to 10 people at most out of a largely celebratory parade and May Day activity that went up and down Pacific Avenue. And that's, of course, become the talk of the town for the last month. And still the talk of the town, the Sentinel's front-paging editorials masquerading as stories around how something has to be done. And it seems to me that certain people on the right are using this as a very convenient club to beat up every... Well, to push their agenda of more cops and crack down on them hippie scum types.
So exactly, there was attacks being made against claims against Sabrosa without any evidence that they were responsible, that the march started there, which it didn't.
Sabrosa is a cafe at 703 Pacific.
Yeah, it's an anarchist cafe. It's in the building where the Hub nonprofit operates out of. We rent them some space.
By anarchist cafe, you mean a cafe that provides coffee for... cheaper than anywhere else in town, literature you can read, computer access.
It's one of perhaps the only indoor location on the downtown mall where, or just on the other side of the street from the so-called mall or downtown area, but where you don't have to pay and people don't have to. They
is there a secret
time.
Sign you need to get in? I mean, do you need to give, you need to give the Brotherhood sign? I mean, do you have to have a commitment to overthrowing the government and destroying every government official?
Not that I've seen so far. Anybody can come and sit and talk. So, but personal attacks have been made as well. Of course, against Wes and others. And
Wes is an activist who's been involved in the creation of the cafe and also a number of other projects like the Free School Movement, the Trash Orchestra, and even, dare I say it, the DIY
parade.
Last Night Parade, which does for a fraction, actually for zero cost, what the Downtown Association had to raise thousands of dollars to do years ago.
So to answer your question, after we were strangely asked to leave, we decided that what were we going to do about it, and we thought we could try to put on our own forum, and the goal was at that point just to try to get a whole diversity of people to sit down and talk and come to some more understanding and rational discussion and try to cool off the reactionary and fear, you know, and finger pointing and whatnot. But so we talked originally. We had an idea, of perhaps more of like a panel discussion or something where any number of people could come all at once. But we asked some folks from Nonviolent Communication Santa Cruz, which is an organization in town which does mediation and they do training. There's a whole nonviolent communication has a literal meaning, but it's also a philosophy and a whole tradition. So we asked these people who have a lot of experience, and some of their facilitators were kind enough to offer their time to help us put these together, and they put in a lot of time helping us organize it and to facilitate the meetings. And they proposed a structure of smaller meetings where people could all sit, and each person would have the feel like they had space to talk. But and so we did that. We created a series of smaller dialogues. Our goal was to bring in business people. Originally, Chip at the Downtown Association said he supported it. We were hoping
but
to get.
Did he show up?
Well, so I'll get to that in a minute. So we were hoping that we would bring in, actually bring in business people, bring in, you know, homeowners, bring in homeless, bring in anarchists, get people to sit down. And it seemed kind of like an interesting project to try to get all these people to the table and have a mediated discussion with a structure that would make it. That was another reason for the smaller groups. The facilitators were, you know, with things being so heated, they were kind of come up with a structure that would avoid a degeneration into like a daytime talk show shouting and pointing at each other. So unfortunately, I was pretty disappointed. I had this higher ideals of people in general that sitting down and talking is a good thing and that people would have an interest in debating or discussing with people even if they disagree. But unfortunately, there was a huge resistance to it and the Chip from the Downtown Association stopped returning our calls, and Christine, one of the Women Who Does Nonviolent Communication went and talked to dozens of business owners directly. I talked to a few, and some people said, oh, it's a good idea, but none of them actually came to the meeting except the woman who's our landlord, who owns an auto repair business around the corner from us, who also got kicked out of the meeting. So I was disappointed. We also really tried to reach out to some of the more conservative groups, the Santa Cruz Neighbors and Take Back Santa Cruz. I tried tons of times to get them involved, and they wouldn't really return my calls. So it didn't turn out to be such a diversity, but it was a really positive.
Let me clarify the thing, Steve. The original meeting that you were kicked out of was a meeting that a couple of city council members held in secret, not in secret, but in essentially behind closed doors, public, not invited, at the police station, was it?
It was in the police station, and the police chief talked, and I'm pretty sure almost the entire, if not the entire, city council was there. And then
it was.
And then
it was a violation of the Brown Act.
Oh, well, maybe I'm wrong.
If there are more than three city council members in the room, and if they are in any way talking and consulting with each other, they can be in the same place and listen.
Well, I'm not going to say that. I remember for sure. There was three of them.
What kind of people were at this meeting?
So the Downtown Association, there's a certain map of downtown. If you're in the downtown shopping area, then you automatically have to be part of this group. You pay a small fee every month. And actually, the old Hub for Sustainable Transportation nonprofit, which used to be on Walnut, was in that zone and evidently was part of this group. And one of the guys who used to work at Peddlers Express, the bike messenger service, used to go sit in on the meetings. But right now, we're right across the street on the wrong side of Laurel.
The wrong side of Laurel.
So we're not part of the group.
Well, who asked you to leave this meeting?
Chip, who's, I'm not sure if his title is the president or whatever, but he's like the head of the group.
Chip, the executive director of the downtown. Mm-hmm. Why did he say, did he just suddenly decide out of the blue, or was he coaxed by certain other individuals?
Well, even right at the beginning, it was based on, the request was made, if you're not a member of the Downtown Association, then please leave at this time. And then some people left, and some people started looking at us, and I was there with a few other people from the hub, and I said, well, we were specifically invited, we run a downtown business also, and then we stayed, and then after the police, two different police people, representatives spoke, then the pressure got turned up higher, and then...
Who was turning up the pressure?
I don't know. I was listening to the police. All I know is after they were done, then the request was made again, and it was specifically directed at us that we had to leave.
The request by Chip.
Yeah. But the feeling was that he was being pressured by
the reason
people.
I raise this issue is because, as you may remember, immediately after the May 1st event, at a city council meeting at which there was nothing on the agenda regarding this, suddenly eight new police officer positions were funded. I don't know if they've been filled yet. According to Sergeant Harms, they haven't been. But this was done behind closed doors with no public comment whatsoever. And the actual open meeting was to agendize to discuss something else entirely.
Well, so this was a big discussion. So the police at the meeting, the police chief spoke, and I forget who the other person, maybe it was Zach Friend. I don't remember. I didn't take notes or anything, but one of them was the new police chief. And they talked for quite a while. And part of it, I think he was trying to justify some of the business owners and other people were angry. Why didn't they respond sooner? People were smashing stuff up for an hour or so.
They weren't smashing stuff up for an hour. They were smashing stuff up for a relatively brief period of time, or I'm not sure. But when I got out on the street, what I noticed was the stores, the windows were broken, were left unattended for about an hour or so.
Yeah, people were angry at the police from that side. And so he was giving his explanation of why,
covering his ass.
Yeah, basically. But it was interesting because in doing so, he debunked some of the lies that had been in the Sentinel, like that the march had started at Subversa. In his account, he gave a timeline: this minute, this thing happened, and they kept talking about how they were valuing the safety of people before property, even though they wanted to protect the property, and that they were afraid because one of the cop cars early on had got surrounded and people had, smashed a paint balloon on it and something else. And so
Winston's car, yeah.
So they were waiting until they could get support from other departments. So he went through this whole thing, but then the kind of main thrust of his talk after explaining what happened and why they couldn't have predicted that this particular thing was going to get out of hand, the whole point of his talk, his talking point that he kept repeating, was about how they needed more police and how he disagreed. Years ago, when people first organized the DIY New Year's Parade, which is an artistic, fun parade on New Year's Eve where all the great artistic people of Santa Cruz come out in costumes and stilts and all kinds of crazy things. And at the first year they organized it, the police sent in undercover people and they were spying on them, and they got a lot of bad press based on that when it got exposed. So they were restricted from how they had to jump through more hoops to be able to spy on people.
I don't think that's really true. I think that, and matter of fact, if you talk to Wes Modes and others, Sherry Connable, who observed the process in the months after that surveillance scandal in 2005-2006, there was no really substantive change in how the police are behaving. If they're claiming differently, that's interesting, but not substantive.
Well, I didn't follow all the details, so you may know more than me about that, Robert.
That's what the police chief said.
But they were claiming that they had some restrictions put on them and that he was referencing some level of the court. Again, I don't have the notes of this meeting with me, but he was claiming there was a certain judge at some district court had said, in fact, they didn't violate anyone's civil rights, which had been an earlier ruling, and they were advocating to have more rights to spy on people, which the city council granted along with giving them new officers, and both the police.
Oh, really? So that was an additional thing that was done in the early May after the.
My recollection. I know for sure that the police chief and I've heard the council were bragging about working closely with the FBI, and they've been announcing that they're bringing in ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to help solve gang problems, which I don't really understand why customs people have anything to do with criminal investigations.
They're illegals, hence they're criminals.
And I also find it questionable that in the communities where people already feel scared and alienated and disenfranchised, that to put ICE in their community and then expect that to reduce gang violence.
ICE, those who don't know it is.
The Immigration and Customs Enforcement, it used to be INS. It's the people who sometimes, not so hasn't happened very much in our community, but they have done raids and they take sometimes break families apart and deport people.
Have you heard with ICE in the last month?
I haven't actually heard anything of it.
I haven't either. But
in the aftermath of this, the police asked for, and it seems that they've been granted in they've been cooperating more with federal police agencies, and at least the claim was that they were getting increased powers of surveillance with less restrictions.
That's
against
them. Retiring Chief Scary is said at the meeting.
He was asking for that, and my recollection was reading in the paper later about it that actually was approved, but that's not something I reviewed before coming to the studio right now, so I don't remember.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know if that happened, because I knew about the new positions, I knew about Scary's resignation, I knew about, because you told me about the exclusion half an hour into the meeting of businesses that were not south of. Did it really have anything to do with your not being part of the Downtown Association, or had something to do with your connection with the Sub Rosa Cafe?
Well, who knows? But they asked all people who aren't members to leave, but I don't know. I actually refused to leave without speaking my mind, so I kind of stood up and said that I have something to say, and people were actually quite respectful and listened, and I told
you to leave.
Well, they did, but I heard later that
they respectfully shut you out.
That some people had, appreciated what I'd said, and I was, thanking the police for debunking the lies of the Sentinel, because they actually refuted some of the things that were being claimed
to cover their own ass.
Yeah, for example, the claim that Sub Rosa was responsible because someone they arrested claims that he saw a flyer for the event at Sub Rosa, but the flyer was all over town. It was in bagel shops and coffee shops everywhere. And so I talked about some of that and the personal attacks that were being made, and then just the atmosphere of a kind of a mob mentality where it didn't matter who was actually guilty, that they just wanted to get somebody in. And people seemed to appreciate it. But then again, they had their meeting in closed doors, and they appreciated what I said or not. Then the city council make their decision based on evidently their private meeting with the business leaders of the shopping
See,
district.
See, that's what I think we should be talking about. Mm-hmm. Instead of having a downtown dialogue to reassure the merchants, I think what we need is a downtown dialogue with the community to make sure that the city council doesn't act as even more of a handmaiden and water boy for the police department and the merchants in this issue. And that's something that has not been done, that was not the focus of the downtown dialogues, and that was a problem I had. I went to, of course, your first dialogue on Sunday, which had about, what, 20 or 30 people?
About 25. It was the limit at each one.
Right. And this was that we all sat around in a circle in the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
You had three people who were kind of leading the show. Everybody gave a little statement. And there were five questions or so put on the board, or four topics, which people commented on. And, you know, it was certainly interesting. But my question is, afterward, and I guess where you're going to talk about the mm-hmm. results of these dialogues, whether it's resulted in any consequences in terms of solidarity, because I think if you get some solidarity with groups that don't want to see city council making secret mm-hmm. decisions that are only open to one side, then it might have had a positive impact, or at least it shows us a way to go. But I haven't noticed that yet.
All right, I'll be happy to answer that.
Okay.
I'm going to request that you not interrupt me after 20 seconds.
Let me talk for a moment.
Yeah. So my impression of, so again, originally we had an idea that was a little bit different about bringing together lots of diverse people to kind of cool things off and build up some understanding even across divides of people we're probably not going to actually work that closely politically with. But what it turned out to be, just by nature of self-selection, is a lot of people who are liberal or progressive or leftist, of some peace activists or some form of the other, of basically not agreeing with an instant knee-jerk hiring of lots of new police in a tight budget. And so I thought that was not what we were originally planning for, but I thought it was really good and equally interesting and important. And I felt like it was the first public space for people who had problems with what was going on in reaction to the May 1st and other events and recent killings of another youth. So it was one of the first places where people who didn't agree with what the city council was doing to get together and talk about it, and lots of people I went to all three of them, and we should keep doing this, we need to have more of this kind of thing, and all kinds of ideas, which I can get into in a minute. So I do think that was really positive, and a number of people, including probably yourself, Robert, said, you know, it's not going to be positive. All we do is sit around here and talk, and nothing comes out of it. And so it's not very long past it right now. It's only a little more than a week after. So hopefully we did have a follow-up meeting with some of the organizers, and I can get into that in a minute. But my hope is that we could build some solidarity, like you're saying, some type of coalition or alliance, it seemed to me, my impression from going to these three and seeing people's reaction and how important it felt to them was that they felt isolated and frustrated and mad about what was going on, and it felt good just to connect with all these other people. And I feel like it would be good for us. I also think it's good. Dialogue is good. I don't think that the city council folks are ever going to come around and just start listening to me and doing what I want necessarily. But I don't think there's anything wrong with dialoguing with anybody. But I also think that real change is probably going to come when we build greater alliances and more. You know, someone like you, Robert, you have so much information and you sit on the council meetings, but if it's just you shouting...
I used to.
Yeah, but if you're shouting them down in the streets all the time and there's not enough...
I wish I could do more shouting them down in the streets. I don't usually... It'd be nice if I did it all the time. I don't know where you got that mythology from.
Well, whatever. I've seen you at the few council meetings I've gone to, and it's good, but it's just like, if it's just you and me and a couple other people, then so I agree with you. That's not very effective.
What happened at the last? I'm going to be interrupting you.
That's fine. You can interrupt now.
Because I want to focus, and it's not meant to be rude. It's meant to kind of direct the conversation. I know that you had Jane Weed mm-hmm. came to one of these meetings. She's a former city council member. I have no use for almost any of these city council members, and that's not personal. Jane seems a nice enough person. It's
mm-hmm.
not what it's about. Did any potentates of any significance show up at the other two meetings?
Well, Scott Kennedy, former council member, also came, and then Don Lane and Catherine Byers both each came to one of them and lent their name to support it. There's probably I don't remember off the top of my head any other kind of elected officials.
Obama didn't show.
No, he called in his blessing.
No, he was busy defending the Israeli government at the time.
Yeah, probably.
Could it be? Well, what did anything come out of it specifically that encouraged you in terms of did you have a sign up sheet where people have you? I know you sent me an email which I've been trying to find unsuccessfully.
Well, I printed it out. I can leave it with you, Robert, if you want. So,
sure.
So the first step was that we gathered together. The dialogue was supposed to be more about people sharing their own, how they were affected by. It was very broad. It could have been it could have been gang violence. It could have been the May 1st events. It could have been other things. But how people were personally affected, but then at the end there was more kind of that type of talk. But at the end, the last go round, we talked about where can we go, what are positive things that we can do, and so we gathered together the ideas from all three meetings, and we kind of
put them together.
And that was like our first step, is to send that all the people who asked to receive it. We've sent that out, and we had a meeting of some of the folks who had organized it, and we have I can talk in a minute about things that personally I'm most personally interested in and excited about of possibilities. But if you want to, if you're interested, Robert, I can read through.
Before you do, and I'm kind of interested, but I mean, mm-hmm. I'm also looking at the clock here, and I'm going to try to put some other stuff together.
Yeah.
I think the problem with the group that I noticed and that I think about as we are talking now is the focus is wrong. The focus has been from the right wing on broken windows, hysteria, more cops, and our response is sort of, don't attack us, defend the suburb, oh no, we didn't do, the Sentinel's telling lies. I think, I don't mind a focus where you're saying something like, I mean, a forum of people coming together to talk about how do you deal with smear jobs from the media, right-wing ranting from pressure groups, and doggy-like obedience by the city council. In other words, if you start with what's happening, instead of spending a lot of time talking about your feelings about the issue and how you love, what do you like best about Santa Cruz? I mean, I was really kind of annoyed with these kinds of questions, which were part of the discussion.
Well, to be fair, Robert, so the originally we were expecting people potentially like the person who got their window smashed and the person that thinks it was okay that windows got smashed,
right,
sitting right next to each other.
And you knew they weren't going to show.
Well, so but the structure was based on the first go around and the other meetings we condensed.
A quick shift in structure might have been appropriate. I'm saying we can
talk about that later. But the point of it was that you had one go around where you just try to establish some common ground and understanding, and then we talked about how we were affected. And I don't think it was just like our feelings. It was like if you knew some people knew people who were killed and things like that, or
and
so
that
it's just
too to me is kind of irrelevant. I mean, yes, people were killed. People have been killed traditionally in Santa Cruz at different times, sometimes even more grimly and gruesomely than now. That doesn't mean we suddenly adopt a right-wing agenda about let's focus on that particular issue. Well, there's not a hell of a lot you can do about that kind of thing. But what you can do is stop a hysterical response.
And that was really the positive things coming out of it, which the process, maybe it's different than something that you would have done, but that was what happened in the end, where it sat around and people talked about how they were affected by these things. And a lot of how they were affected was how they felt about the city's reactionary response to it.
But are they planning to do something about it? See, that's the point. So you can talk about it all you want, but are you going to do something? Are you working to... And you said that was the last item on the agenda.
Yeah,
what can be
that
done?
That was like the idea was
what
this was
coming
the,
out of
the
this?
Beginning of something, and it wasn't a clear vision. It was like this is a start of something. And so at the end, like I said, we gathered together some ideas. And I underlined a few of them.
But go through the ones you think that have to do with things you think should be done in the future that people will agree to actually put some energy into. I mean, you might propose me.
Well, so some of the things was to support, to kind of make people aware of already existing organizations to support them in new. So, for example, some of the Santa Cruz High School students have recently formed a group called Peace on the Streets in response to another one of their recent graduates being killed. And they are... they had a conference at Loud Nelson. They brought in different people from organizations that have already done a lot of work and know a lot about, for example, Lucha is a program at Soquel High School, and the Brown Berets came in and they're talking about forming a Brown Berets chapter here in Santa Cruz. And I think Barrios Unidos was there. I wasn't able to go. So that was one thing, is like supporting existing projects. Another one was there was some talk about trying to pressure the Sentinel to modify the way that their online forums are, because it allows for anonymous postings, potentially, trying to publicly pressure them, or maybe if it's necessary, there's certain people whose individual names have been slandered that may be a libel suit. Another one was something that under the general heading of considering alternatives to more police as the solution to everything. So one idea which personally I'm kind of excited about being involved in with my own time is the idea of like a community response team. John Malkin and some other folks had been talking about that. It's the idea would be, well, I'll give an example. John Malkin's class, he teaches a free school class called Anarchy, Compassion, and Spirituality. We were talking about it a few weeks ago, and I was giving an example. I work at the bike church. We help anybody regardless. We charge money, but if people don't have money, they're welcome to come anyway. So we don't turn anyone away. Unfortunately, that means sometimes we have to deal with people who don't have very good social skills or crazy or whatever, drug addicts. People get violent. People get aggressive. So on a fairly regular basis, we have to deal with this. And over 10 years almost that I've been there, and dozens of incidents that myself and other people have been involved in, maybe hundreds, maybe three times somebody has called the police. And all the other times, people yelling, people getting angry, people threatening, people drunk with tools in their hands, you know. And it's like we don't have special trainings for it, but we just try to treat people as people, and we're fairly successful. And so we were talking about this was in my mind how I connected to this idea that John Malkin was putting forth about the community response team, is the idea that, you know, why couldn't that be a broader community response, whereas the police come in, and either because most police act in a certain way where they bring in a high level of force and authority right from the beginning, and even on the rare case that a police was trying to be nicer, the history of all the other police is going to bring that attitude, and so there it escalates situations very quickly. And so there was this idea to try to form a community response team of people who have training in de-escalating situations and primarily just verbally, but maybe if necessary, you know, some what he calls the protective use of force, you know, but that, you know, most people in town and maybe our group itself would want to have the police as a backup option, but that in so many cases, you know, people are, it's possible to divert people's anger or whatever's going on in a more nonviolent way, in a peaceful way, without coming in instantly demanding that they be, you know, under control, or else they're going to get tackled to the ground. And so this was something that I thought was a good idea. And John is going to had some ideas. He was going to contact myself and others about when he was ready with some ideas to get a group together and start talking about how to go forward with that. Something else people talked about. Promoting, some of these were very general. Some we had some more specific ideas. That's a more specific one. Some more general ideas was kind of long-term promotion of the idea of restorative justice rather than punitive justice.
Explain to people what that is.
So, well, typically our justice is you after crimes are committed,
you get punished.
You find somebody, you grab them, you put them in jail, and that's pretty much it. And I actually am not. You know, highly informed about restorative justice. I know the basic principles of it. Some of the folks from nonviolent communication work with that. So one example would be that you get, I think they would not even necessarily use the word the same victim and perpetrator, but the people who commit a crime, the people who are the victim of the crime are, and their friends and family who are affected would be brought together and some type of communication some type of restoration that feels good other than just them being punished. So if you're interested in this topic, Robert, I would encourage you to invite someone else in your program who knows more about it.
No, that's okay. We were simply trying to get a brief summary. Mm-hmm. You're doing a fine job. Take a deep breath.
Yeah. And so another thing that I was one of my ideas, other people had said a lot of same themes, was to push for the city to consider evidence about what actually is successful in reducing crime before making a decision on the spur of the moment with this assumption that more police equals less crime.
Not to mention more laws that are criminalizing poor people, which is what we've had for the last decade,
mm-hmm.
and which may have resulted in some of the tensions that created evil broken windows syndrome. We're kind of running low on time here. Any other ideas quickly that came up that you want to present, or any suggestions for people who want to get involved?
Well, so another idea I had, Robert, was to try. So Christine King from Nonviolent Communication sent these notes out to everyone who asked for them. But I'm interested in potentially coming out of it an alliance, some type, or coalition I don't want a new organization with leadership and you have to create a charter and all that. But just there's a lot of people doing good stuff already, and I'm interested in finding a way to get people together to talk more, to work together on different things. And I'm not sure exactly what form that's going to take yet, but people can contact I guess they could contact me if they want to know, or if they're I'm going
and
to
how
send
can they reach you?
So I have an email that's steve@santacruzhub.org, and if anyone was involved in the other downtown community dialogues, there might be an email going out about that. And
if you had any actual communication — this is a difficult question to ask you on the air, but why not — with any of the actual window breakers, or if you had any indirect communication with people who may have talked to people who you think you have any information directly from these people?
I've talked to people who were there and saw the windows being broken, and they didn't say they did it, and I don't think they did, but that had some sympathy for it.
Well, that's not the issue. I mean, the idea is to get some understanding of whether this was — some people have claimed this is — they were talking, by the way, about the May 1st window breaking. For those who don't know, it happened on May 1st around 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night after a parade, which had nothing to do with window breaking, but was used for the cover for doing that. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if anybody has had any conversations with people who actually, you know, give some motivation as to what these actually were, these, you know, any specific ideas of
the only
why.
People I talked to were there, and other people started breaking it, and
they didn't.
And there was kind of a general anger
at
corporate culture, but I don't know. I'm not a very good person to answer that question, because to me, Robert, it just seemed kind of just reckless and silly to target any old business.
Well,
whether
that's not
or not,
the issue. Yeah, the issue is was it done by provocateurs? Was it
done by
wild and crazy kids with a, you know, who were doing an initiation ritual? Was it done by hardcore outsiders? I mean, in other words, this is a question I'm sure that everybody has, including the police and all these investigators. Mm-hmm. And sounds like you don't have any answers.
I have no idea.
So we will let you go on this.
But
one
I have another. Before I go, Robert, if I could switch topics, something I thought you might be interested in.
Mm.
That so I have had a few communications with the city council recently, and one of them I was giving some suggestions of positive things they could do, as opposed to, you know, what they have been doing in the last few weeks is publicly criticizing Sabrosa, putting more police on the street. Ryan Coonerty and Lynn Robinson wrote an article. Column where they were saying you could support positive community groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz Neighbors, ignoring groups that actually have day-to-day experience and long histories of dealing with gang violence like Barrios Unidos. But anyway, so one thing I suggested was that the police or the council should investigate this one issue. So recently, police showed up at the building. Sabrosa was closed. It was a few weeks, maybe a week or two ago. Someone from the DA's office and three other police officers showed up.
They didn't knock at the Sub Rosa door. They knocked at your
door.
Yeah,
no one was there. It was locked
up.
And so they came next door into the People Power office.
Now, were you the person who received them at the door?
I was not, but someone who works in the office received them. They asked him some questions about the lease, and this person said that, I don't know. You have to talk to Steve, which is me. He's not here. They gave him my contact information. That's all that happened. They left. They didn't get an answer to any questions even. They just came in, asked some questions, got a contact information, never followed up. That's all that happened.
So they never contacted you?
No, they never contacted me. They never came back.
So the Sentinel blew this up into a huge storm.
And the Sentinel reported it as a raid on Sabrosa, complete with the claim that that they kicked in the door and that people were complaining of mistreatment and had filed a police report, which is... So it's like this metal door that I don't think a martial arts master could kick in, and nobody would have called to make a complaint to the police department. So anyway, I called the Sentinel, and
it's a creative fiction.
Yes, it's very impressive. Yeah. So I called the Sentinel, and I talked to the reporter who had wrote it, and I was like, oh, what's going on? Because I actually worked in this building, and it's not what happened when it said in your article.
Who was the reporter?
I think her name was Genevieve, but I talked to...
Jennifer Squires?
I don't remember. I'm not prepared to say that I remember who I talked to, because I talked to a few different people during the week when I was planning this event. So whoever I talked to told me, oh, well, that's what we got. It was straight from the DA's office. And I was like, well, they also had mentioned in the paper Officer Martinez or Sergeant Martinez.
Maybe Lieutenant.
Yeah, I don't know what it's... So then, and she said, well, yes, his name's in the article. So I requested to the city council that they should do an investigation, that according to the Sentinel, this information, which was clearly false and it had to be known to be false, was given to them by the DA's office and by the by a police officer. And so I suggested that they could have an investigation. And is this true? And if so, why? And Mike Rockin says that
that's our mayor.
Yeah, mayor Mike Rockin, the socialist, and he says that he thinks like the threats against Arosa are pretty much passing, and so he doesn't see any point in looking into the fact that evident that allegedly the DA and the police are giving out false information to the press.
Well, if they did, they would never do it again. We know that.
Yeah. So
for sure.
So that's something that I'm not sure how we're going to go forward with, but I would hope that we could build some pressure for them to do an investigation of that.
We have a caller, mm-hmm. perhaps a question for you.
Okay.
Extending your time here. Sure. You're on the air with Steve and Robert. Hi there, caller.
Hi, you two wonderful beings, you.
Yes.
I wanted to advise all of our listeners to check out the recent IndieBay posting about the one of the co-founders of Take Back Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah, I saw that earlier today. It's it's an attack on the patriotic local group that so identifies homeless people as the menace and panhandlers as a huge threat. Yeah, it's an article called "What Was Tough on Crime? Take Back Santa Cruz, Founded by a Corporate Criminal." Is that what you're talking about?
Bam, boom, bam. That's the one. I just yeah. find it interesting how people's like moral values are sometimes so flexible, shall we say.
Well, you know, I gotta say, in defense of Take Back Santa Cruz, which I would rarely defend, I don't know if the so-called criminal origins of Take Back Santa Cruz people or anybody's behavior prior to 2002 has much to do with anything. In other words, it's a nice way to say nee 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 to Take Back Santa Cruz, but I don't know if it's what's really relevant is their platform, their behavior, and what they're and how they're proceeding now. You know.
Well, Robert, right, I think that I agree with you to some extent, but I think that in other people's minds, they've got so much support so quickly, and people have really feel like this is a really positive thing, and they get all wrapped up in this idea and the police and the tough on crime stuff. So I feel like if only for casting doubt in the minds of other people who are so quick to support Take Back Santa Cruz, potentially that is a positive outcome of this type of stuff thing
well,
going on.
Actually, I mean, if you and I don't, and I assume you, caller, don't support Take Back Santa Cruz, so you know.
I'm a member of Give Back Santa Cruz, actually.
You are a member. Tell us about Give Back Santa Cruz while you're on the air.
Well, you know, this land was essentially stolen from the indigenous people, then, you know, later from the, well, stolen by the Spaniards, who then became the Mexicans, you know, and then the, you know, European descendants stole it from the Mexicanos, and, well, I'm just in favor of basically giving the land back to everyone who's now here and not worrying so much.
So, in other words, you're a vicious racist who wants to return things to... And you're an India Native American supremacist.
Viva Aztlan, man.
There you go. Or actually, Native American and perhaps mestizo supremacist.
I just wanted to throw that out there. That, you know, it's just interesting. I think it just demonstrates a bit of Take Back Santa Cruz's perhaps class
Well, I think it shows hypocrisy.
It's totally okay for someone to cheat someone on their financial accounting, but it's not okay for someone to like beg for some change on Pacific mm-hmm. Avenue. I mean, it's just really kind of gives me a sticky.
Right. Well, of course, I don't know if we can.
You know?
I think probably most Take Back Santa Cruz members will probably claim that both. Although maybe they wouldn't. I mean, I don't know. You know, a lot of us, left and right alike, don't have a lot of sympathy for. The income tax, for at least for the lower two thirds of the country. I don't know. I mean, maybe you do. I don't know if I do or not.
Oh, but, I love paying taxes.
Ah, well, there you go. I'm glad to hear you're a patriotic Native American.
Nothing like taxation without representation, eh?
Yeah, well, representation is something you'll get when you're older and wiser. Yes. Anything else before so I can kick Steve out of the studio or at least sideline him and get back to my tapes?
I'm going to let you get back to your tapes. I just wanted to throw that out there. You both have a good night.
Hey, thank you. And we've been talking with
Steve Schnarr.
And Steve is can be reached at Steve at
SantaCruzHub.org.
Thank you. SantaCruzHub.org. He is continuing to, I understand that you are continuing to try to organize around some of the principles, the Malkin suggestion of a community response team.
I think John Malkin is going to be a more contact person for that.
He does a Wednesday show called...
But I told him I wanted to get involved if he gets it going. And Christine King from Nonviolent Communication is going to go forward with having more of these dialogues.
Unfortunately, you're going to be the person they're going to email because we haven't got time to give all these other email addresses.
Well, anyway, the first one, just so you know, in terms of the dialogues themselves, she's going to put one together, a community of faith, people from different communities of faith responding to violence.
Right, but of course the problem is, as I said at the beginning of this whole discussion, maybe some ideas have come out of this whole thing, but we don't see a mob of determined activists descending on the city council to demand they re-vote for the police department budget with a actual public debate and some kind of stats that show the presence of police officers is going to actually make a difference in this situation. In other words, a rational, pressured solution was not being organized and hasn't been organized in the last month. I haven't organized it. You haven't
organized it. I think our goal is to help create the conditions in which that is more likely to come into existence.
Okay. That's a little vague, but I appreciate that. You know, Steve, I appreciate
Thanks for having me on, Robert.
I want those notes, unless you want them yourself.
You're not going to give them to the FBI, are you?
I will pass them on to Take Back Santa Cruz.
Okay, thank
you. Just to be sure that they are fully informed.
Okay.
And they know where to find you, Steve.
Yeah, well, they know. I've tried to talk to them. I've told them, come and talk to me, Take Back Santa Cruz. I'll be happy to talk.
Yeah, you did try to get them involved in this whole discussion. Is there any place, any particular event coming up that you think is relevant? Is there a date for any event that you know about?
Not right now.
Okay, well, keep us advised if there is. You know, we'll certainly broadcast to put it out here. As you know, in spite of the poo-pooing, some of us showed up anyway at the Dunkirk.
All right.
So there we are.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Steve. You're welcome to hang. I'm just going to continue to play some more of the voices from those pesky people on the streets who just seem to litter the avenue no matter what the how many police officers they put downtown. Maybe a whole new broom or a vacuum cleaner needs to sweep clean. So here's a little bit more from And we have a caller calling in, perhaps for a comment with Steve, perhaps for his own thoughts. Hey there, caller. Caller.
Oh, hey, I'm on.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, this is Mad Mike, the Wonder Dog, baby.
Hey there, Mad Mike.
I just want to say fuck the police, fuck the law. And, you know, they trying to do, they'll run everybody out of town, you know, and all scumbags, the Downtown Association and all that, you know, we can, they want to play dirty, we can boycott, we can get everybody to boycott downtown and, run them out of business, see how they like that, you know, it'd be just like the same thing if an oil slick and hit, downtown, you know, people don't want to go down there anymore, you know, it can be really pretty, I can think of a 10 things off the top of my head right now that'll be so noxious that nobody want to come down there to the shop. You know, people, they think they got a problem with panhandling, and people sitting on the sidewalk or maybe smoking an occasional nasty cigarette or a joint or drum circles or all the other little so-called quality of life. You know, I can see people pissing, but I understand that, you know, I'm against people pissing in the doorways and shitting anywhere, but when you got to go, you got to go. They lock all the bathrooms up and all the downtown associations or whatever restaurants are, you know, not friendly to anybody using their bathroom, where else are you going to go?
We have to say, Mad Mike, that you may know there are 3 visitors' bathrooms that are now available that are actually better than the hole-in-the-wall garage parking urinals that they provide that are open during the day. In other words, if you go to the Bookshop Santa Cruz, I think it's the Asawa Tea House. I may have the name wrong. And then the 3rd one is a Pizza My Heart. There's a little sign out front that says Visitor's Bathroom. Now, if you're banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz, like I am, I suppose you aren't considered to be a visitor. But for those who aren't banned from those private businesses, and you don't have to be a customer, supposedly, to use them. Of course, they're only open when the businesses are open. Now, the real question you raise is about a boycott. And interestingly enough, that issue came up between me and an activist in Fresno, Jeremy, who ran the Homeless Marathon, the Homelessness Marathon. You may remember that one, Mad Mike. Every year in February, for the last 12 years, there's been a Homelessness Marathon nationally. It goes on for about 12 hours, 14 hours. And homeless people from all over the country call in and talk about stuff. And a nationwide broadcast. But Jeremy's more radical than that. He doesn't just do a once-a-year shtick. He's concerned in Fresno, and he proposed there that there be a boycott of downtown businesses until they agree to stop passing anti-homeless laws and reverse those laws. We've suggested the same things as Huff members at different times in Santa Cruz, but that's considered very controversial and very unfriendly to the merchants, and so we've had a hard time even getting all the Huff members to agree to do, you know, to call for a boycott. First, for example, last summer we proposed people boycott Bunny Shoes. Not because Bunny Shoes has a specifically discriminatory policy, particularly against homeless people, but it was involved in helping to put together this anti-homeless injunction against the 2 homeless street musicians, Miguel De Leon and Anna Richardson, who now, if they sleep once downtown at night, anywhere in that downtown area, face 5 days in jail and, I don't know, hundreds of dollars in fines. It's true that it's illegal for everybody to sleep anywhere or somewhere even on any public property in Santa Cruz, even without that injunction. But this was done as a sort of a DTA merchant pleasing thing against 2 homeless musicians who have 0 violent crimes charged against them. In fact, 0 crimes involving any property theft or damage. All they've been charged with is the injunction bans them from sleeping downtown. It's really, in other words, a boycott is not necessarily a bad idea in Fresno or here, but it requires organizing, and we weren't able to organize it last summer with respect to Bunnies, with respect to Lulu Carpenters, and those were, Lulu Carpenters actually is discriminated directly against homeless people, and that's actually a more specific example. We've been after them in the past. Usually we boycott a particular business with a particular demand, saying you change this policy, or, you know, we advise people this is what this business does in order to kind of send a message to other businesses. If you try to boycott all businesses, you know, first of all, most people won't do it. I mean, they want to go downtown and buy something anyway. You know, not necessarily a knickknack, but maybe a hamburger or, you know, something at New Leaf Market or a burrito at the Taqueria Vallarta. So it's a hard thing to suggest. But out-of-town people, homeless organizations in other cities could call for a boycott of Santa Cruz by out-of-town tourists. And they could say, we advise you not to come to Santa Cruz, sort of like what's happening in Arizona, until the laws are changed. And, you know, that could be one way to go.
No, you can come down to Santa Cruz. Just have, like, on the back of this, you're doing a Huff opinion poll about do you support the Vice Mayor's Coonerty Law Assembly, and, you know, put it on the back of the petition. And then pass them out to people. And on the back of it, it shows you the places that you don't want to, you know, patronize support. Also with that, it's also people, there's places that are homeless or street people friendly that you want to, give them an alternative. You want to come downtown and shop. And I'm not saying boycott. Some people down on the mall,
Okay, well, you did use the word boycott, but I know what you mean. I mean, remember last summer, you maybe remember, I don't know if you were around, we had this little sign we encouraged businesses to put up saying, we do not discriminate against homeless people. We feel that homeless people should have the right to sleep not everywhere and anywhere, but somewhere. And we asked people to put this little sign in their window, and we encouraged people to patronize those shops. And we didn't even say, don't patronize the shops that don't have it. We just said, do patronize the shops that do have it. A number of shops put them up. I think there are very few left. One of them is Alfresco's in its new location down near the Bookshop Santa Cruz, or down near, you know, across from the Cinema 9 Theater. So we have thought about that. And any other reports from the street, Mad Mike? I'm going to roll on you.
Nothing's going on. Just the usual, same old. Them beating the bushes on the west side, stuff like that. Different places. I guess what they're doing, they're mainly focusing their attention on Poganip and different things, and drug places. So and everything's basically kind of a little bit quiet. Ain't no gang banging bullshit going on right now. You know, I heard somebody got murdered on the beach. That turned out to be false. Got shot on the beach.
This was today?
A couple days ago, something like that. That turned out to be false.
Oh, good.
But, yeah, but so far, you know, Camp Defiance is still intact, and I'm okay, you know.
All right, well, thanks, Mike. Call again if you got some more thoughts.
All right.
Thanks, man.
All right.
And, of course, still in the studio with us is the notorious Steve, who's been trying. Actually, he's not notorious. He's rather self-effacing, although he certainly organizes a meeting. Gets more people to meetings than I can, that's for damn sure. If you have any thoughts at any point, Steve, and you want to, you know, interrupt with your, you know, interject, please do. Otherwise, we're going to play some more tape and invite your calls at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And you're on Free Radio. Hello there, caller.
Hey! Hey, what's going on?
This sounds like not the man we were just playing, but this sounds like Drum Circle Dave.
Yeah, I was, like, calling because I couldn't hear the radio station. Just Hold on just a second, okay?
Uh-huh.
Hold on. Okay, we're back on the air. Yeah, I just saw it. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, a little bit of the update on the drum circle.
Go for it.
The ending of the chess game, and then suddenly two police cars showed up after you left, Rob, and the coffee left, and Mike was picking up all the trash, you know, talking to the cops, saying, hey, you know, we really want this, you know, and they were right there trying to get everybody to stop, and it wasn't even dark yet. It was almost dark. It was just at dusk, and they were, like, on both sides of the river and just messing with everybody as much as they could right before dark at the drum circle at the Soquel Bridge across from ACS and behind the bank.
How many cops were there?
At least two. One Sergeant Harms in full dress. Unfortunately, he should show up naked. You know, he'd be more appreciated by the women, but he'll never do that. And then there's another guy, Latino, heavy set. Looks like he could be a sumo wrestler. You know, he should show up in just that, you know, the bottom garb, not the blue suit. Just, a, you know, the little tie wrap. Man, he'd be impressive, that guy.
What did these two police officers say to the drum circle people?
Just get the hell out of here, man. We don't like your kind.
Did they claim there was unreasonably disturbing noise?
No, I mean, by the time they got there, man, there wasn't anything going on. I mean, because they suck everything out of the air breathable to anyone.
So how many people were there when the police arrived?
I'd say at least 25, man.
And did the people meekly disappear into the night, or did they continue?
Yeah, you know, we're all just kind of like hiding behind our evil drumsticks and drums going, oh, no, the drum cops have shown up again for the umpteenth hundred thousandth time to impress upon us they hate what we do and we don't do what they like.
What time did the police show up, do you know?
About 7:30, man.
I understand, what do we got to do
understand. To do something that they like?
Dave, I understand.
Mean,
well,
what
no, the police
is
are,
it hype?
Dave, I don't
two,
think...
Two, three, four, what?
Dave, I don't think the police are ever
do they
got,
need
Dave,
to
Dave,
make them smile
Dave,
and get
Dave,
off our cases?
Dave.
We're just there to drink coffee, eat donuts, and... Do some
Dave,
drumming. What do you
Dave,
think?
Dave, your theatrics are noted, but let me get to the information side of this particular exchange. You're not going to get the police to like you, I don't think, but...
Pot smoke at them. What do you think?
The point I'm saying...
Get out here.
The point I have is that the week before, I guess I was told a police officer, or maybe it was 2 weeks before, came to the levee and said, at 8 o'clock, and said, we'd like you to leave. I guess it was the week before, by 10 o'clock. And that... But now you say they've come back at an earlier time at 7:30, and they were telling you to leave?
Yeah, like now they've got the fly paper out, and they're trying to get us all stuck to it by 8 o'clock, like a new sheet of music, like, hey, you guys got to leave by 8, you know, sundown, because, hey, you know,
Dave,
it's like, hey, you know, well, who's upset? It's the police that are upset,
Dave,
man.
Is that,
no
Dave,
one upset.
Oh, Dave, is that actually what they said to you? Or is that, I mean, what
makes them pull their car over must mean that they're upset. I mean, unless they have a hot date with
Dave,
some homeless chick.
Dave, I'm turning down your sound for a minute because I want to ask you a question. Dave, whoa, slow down.
Man.
Dave. Well, I can't even give him a minute here.
I don't know.
Dave, you're, let me intrude here and say, what specific laws did they claim you were violating?
You know, public civility law. We were just hanging out.
What law did they what did they say they would cite you for if you didn't leave?
Well, I didn't talk to them officially. There was one woman there. She has no legs, and she has a big voice with those. And those police don't want to deal with that legless woman.
Now, was she arrested? Because I read something on the online that said she was arrested. Yet when I was there earlier at 4:30 or 5, she was, you know, tooling around. It was a very
Because I had left and they were still there and she was still there. So what had happened? Maybe they did arrest her.
Well, I don't know. I just
no. But if they did, those men are headless.
Well, if anybody knows what went on later in the drum circle, do give a call, 427-3772. And, Dave, what do you think are the intention of the drummers for next week? Are they going to return?
We're going to be there, and we're going to be there even bigger than this week.
Last week.
Because I know this is going out over the air, and I know that there's some drummers that want to drum those blue suits, that want to just take our freedoms away. You know, we're going to drum them out of their beats.
I see. Well, thank you, Dave, for the update.
And Rob, stop by, have a donut, have some coffee. And, hey, Santa Cruz, stop by the bridge, stand up for your solidarity, and help the drummers out. You know, they're trying to take away dirt from us now. Dirt.
Well,
D-I-R-T.
That's all
they want from the drummers now. They want to push us into the water, into the river.
You have no deed for the dirt, Dave. I'm sorry.
We're not dirty drummers. We're pretty clean. We smell good, too.
Some would think the police are all wet. So.
Now there was one hottie there that, you know, a little community service on a quad early in the morning told us we couldn't drum there, too.
We'll leave these sexist innuendos.
Okay, well, hey. You take care, Rob, and peace, Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye.
And that was Drum Circle Dave giving his update. Let's take a brief musical break and then return with more from Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's my show. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you for another half hour. And I guess before I go, we'll have to take this caller because that's what we do on this show. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio. What's your name?
You can hardly get a brief musical interlude, can you?
Well, we got. Sounds like a Brent interlude coming up.
This is, oh God. After Dave, I love Dave, but
you can be florid. Florid.
I swear that's. Well, I don't want to be a complete ass, but. One of the partial reasons why I couldn't hang out too much after that. Anyway, I just want to call and say hi.
Hi.
Maybe I'll like end up acting like Dave too. Yeah, man.
Hey, Dave doesn't usually sound like that. If you call his answering machine, he's a very sedate, conservative voice. Dave seems to be a man of different kinds of roles, but we'll let him speak for himself. Anyway, what have you got? You got some updates, Brent, or what's up?
All right. I did want to call. My act, Love Gutter, a week ago Saturday. We've already discussed this online on the air on Sunday, but I went up to go. I Googled the name on the ticket and the address of the Borders Bookstore building, and I found an office.
Uh-huh.
And I went to go visit the office, and I was really disheartened to find that their office is this big fat law office sitting right above the Borders sign. The worst place to have an office if you know.
What's the name of this group?
Penrose and Attack.
Attic is the judge. He's the elderly Robert Attic. We call him Artichoke Heart Attic.
You got it. That's the one. That's. I can't believe I'm going. That these are the people who signed my. Maybe it's good that I'm going to see a judge. I mean a lawyer in court. Anyway, I wanted to go by there and discuss it with them and find out maybe when the best times to play so I don't disrupt their office. You know, we got a ticket early evening on Sunday, so I thought that would be all right. But they were not happy to see me.
They weren't. Who did you talk to?
Looked like they were painting the building inside, so I kind of wove myself through the painters and I got to the front office. I talked to a receptionist person, but she was threatening to call the police. I was trying to be very, very, very nice, but it was frustrating. I'm just going to be happy to just face this down in court, but I really wish there wasn't a law office right above the place where my act normally plays.
Interesting.
Yeah, I could hear a pin drop from the street down below up there. It was so, it's like a resonator.
Huh. Now, who is the actual person who signed? For those who don't know, Brent, you play a 50-gallon drum.
Yes.
In a band called Love Gutter, and you had quite a crowd of people who were appreciating your music at the corner of Soquel and Pacific, where you'd played for about 20 minutes, is that right?
That's right.
And this was, on Saturday,
last
Saturday?
Yeah, I guess it was Saturday afternoon.
I'm not sure. I'm estimating. And you actually stopped playing when they came, but Officer Winston wrote you a citation for unreasonably disturbing noise based on a so-called private person's complaint.
Correct.
Correct. So you went up there to talk to the private people and try to come to some understanding, and the
Well, first I said, that, you know, here's a ticket, and she goes, oh, you're that guy, and she said, we were told that we have certain rights, and I'm like, you have all kinds of rights, but not the right, you know, I mean, like, this law doesn't apply, and I didn't mean to go up there and discuss that. I mean, that'll all be handled in court, but I did want to just kind of say hello. Now I kind of regret doing that, but yeah, I went up there to say hi. And actually try to see what the situation was and who was continually complaining over the last several months about us.
Whose name was on the citation?
The last name is Penrose, and a scribble in front of it. Stephen Penrose is the office, but I didn't. They might also have a residence dwelling on top of the building.
Well, you should probably you know, make a specific request. Email the police department to find out. You know, who's the complainant? You have a right to know the full name and address of the complainant.
I don't. That's interesting because I don't know if even the police department has that at this point.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
If they sign the ticket, they must be filling out some other form or answering.
Yeah, that's well. At least that if there's any way to judge from how I got a citation, they called down the individual Sean Riley who didn't like my singing the song Downtown in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz in the middle of the day, and they had him, you know, fill out a lot of information about his, you know, his citation, and then they, you know, they gave me a citation, which he signed, but they got additional information.
Okay.
So you probably, whoever this Penrose is, whether it's a man, a woman, or a child, you know,
yeah,
you should be able to find
out. Hey,
I'm
going to do a cop ride-along on Wednesday night.
Whoa, with who?
The ride-along program. I signed up to.
Oh, that's good. Do you bring your drum with you?
No, it's happening this Wednesday night, and it's interesting because it's the Good Times ran my letter to the editor in response to Zach Friend's doom and gloom Good Times article last week.
Yeah, I saw your letter. I really wish that people would read your letter in response to the Rose woman who said she was complaining about your.
Get
your
this though,
drum.
Sasha Rose. Penrose. I think it's the same person.
Oh, could be.
Yeah.
You know, but I think your response really, in fact, I think I'll probably read it on the air. It is really a very impressive and articulate response.
I should drink and write more often.
First, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, give me some of what you're drinking, as Lincoln said of
Grant. You know what? I actually tried to write some emails yesterday, and I was like, well, so far it's been working really good after drinking a beer, and I went and drank a beer, and that didn't help out at all. So it's not a pattern doesn't hold. But I've been really frustrated with the police department. I thought, you know, I should actually try to do a ride-along and see what it's like from their side. It's been really crazy in town. Lots of sirens, parades of sirens going through town every day now.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's commendable that you're trying to, you know, be at least, you know, open-minded. I wanted to note also, you probably got the same email. I got an email from Tom Noddy, the Street Performers Guild spokesperson, I guess, or maybe just meeting organizer. I'm not sure what his actual role is.
Yeah.
He's noted there's going to be another meeting at 5 o'clock on Friday, June 11th, which I guess is a week from tomorrow.
Yep.
Unless people object, and this is for, I guess, both street performers and supporters of street performers, unless I miss my understanding.
I think you're right.
And people are encouraged to bring their tickets, bring their witness information, bring their ideas. This is what I'm encouraging him to do. Tom Noddy has got his own ideas about, and as well he should, about what should be brought along. And
well, definitely street performer focus would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Regular downtown issues, probably not. Not panhandling issues, things like that.
Right.
But definitely street performer issues.
Right. It is the Street Performers Guild, although, you know, in a way, street performers are.
We got very little accomplished last week because. And I wonder if we'll get anything more accomplished this time around.
Well, I think it's a good question, but I think that we do have some issues we can bring. And also, I think, you know, I was going to say this, maybe this is, we decided not to go back to the Sub Rosa where we had our meetings before a year ago. And I think at this time, that decision is particularly unfortunate.
Yeah.
Not only is it cheaper at the Sub Rosa, and not only do you have more time at the Sub Rosa. We had to rush to end the meeting because you can only take a room for an hour and a half. But the Sub Rosa, you know, well, I guess I said this before, needs our support.
there wasn't any meeting facilitation, and that would have been very helpful because some of the, I don't know how, what you call them, blockers or spoilers. I don't know what the correct. I think we had one spoiler in the group who spoke every other time and kind of dominated. But that's my.
Well, I think I hear you. No, I mean I think a number of people probably agreed with you. But I think if you're talking about Sexy Peter, who is an outspoken guy and are very articulate, I think he was impatient.
Wingnut.
I think he had a lot of good ideas. Some call you a wingnut, Brent, and I still think I have criticisms of you, and we have made them in the past. But you're also you got a lot to offer, and I'm really glad you call the show
right.
And give your thoughts and stand up for the rights.
I just came
people.
To talk shit about Peter.
Yeah, and you just came. Well, I mean, some people think his saxophone playing really sucks. I can't really tell what a good saxophone.
I don't think it matters. I think But he just should be free to be able to play it,
Right, but I think at the meeting, I think his frustration, and we're getting into kind of some arcane discussion that most people in the air listening, and what the fuck is this? But it is important, and I said the same kind of thing to Steve earlier. I don't know if you heard my conversation with Steve of the Downtown Dialogue stuff. Is that the important thing is to come out of this with some concrete proposals? And I think some of us, including Peter, were frustrated that we weren't coming out with anything concrete. We were just...
We actually could have, I believe.
Tom Noddy was giving his usual lengthy rap about the Street Performers Guild history, yeah. Which Tom is an excellent raconteur. We know that. I might have had him on the show, but...
I don't agree with you. I think that Tom didn't get half of what he wanted to talk about, and intentionally he shut it down because of Peter's verbosity. I didn't get anything out that I wanted to discuss. And then the entire marimba group was there. They didn't get to fully unfold because Peter took most of the speaking time. And if with proper facilitation, that you wouldn't allow that.
Really, I didn't get the impression. I thought Tom did most of the speaking. That was my feeling.
He had a lot of things he wanted to share, but he called the meeting. If you're just going to like spend a lot of time saying there's nothing coming out of this meeting, there's nothing coming out of this meeting, wait, I have something I would like to bring out, and in mid sentence. He's going to do that over and over again. That's actually spoiling.
Right,
he's
just blocking. This discussion is probably something you and I should have, sort of off the air. It's something most people don't know about. But I would say anybody who's interested in street performer
right.
issues.
This is not a private conversation.
Well, you and I have got to get private there, Brent. but this will be happening next Friday at 5 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson. And again, one of the problems we have is it's only going to be lasting for an hour and a half because I couldn't coax people to take the damn thing outside in the summer weather. I don't know why. I couldn't do that, but hopefully we'll be able to have future meetings outside where there's no time limit.
You were uncharacteristically reserved in that meeting.
I was very reserved.
Yeah.
I'm trying to maintain my a new reputation as an elder statesman.
Right.
Probably not. That's a bad idea.
A thoughtful mediator.
More like a freaked out elderly guy. But in any case, yeah, come on down to the Street Performers Guild meeting June 11th, Friday at 5. It may change times, in which case I'll announce it at the Sunday or next Thursday's meeting. And you air time when I do my show. And you, Brent, have got the citation, but you haven't yet set a court date, right?
Correct.
In fact, you probably can't. You might not be able to set a court date for a month, or because it's a private citizen's complaint, you may have to. Be aware that it may happen sooner than you think. So be sensitive to that. Keep an eye on what's happening with the courts. Check with the municipal court clerk every now and then to see what's going on with your citation.
Okay. I encourage everybody to get a copy of the Good Times that just came out. Look at the letter to the editor section. And I have a letter responding to Zach Friend's very ominous guest column last week. It's scathing information about the police department.
I know that... Zach Friend is, I notice he rarely provides the statistics, but always seems to be getting these nasty repressive laws zipped through, and that's not, of course, all his fault, but he's part of that whole process. It's too bad.
Yeah. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Bye, Will.
Bye-bye. And now, how about that musical break?
I'm taking the needle off of the record. And shove it into my arm wherever but I feel life is coming on too strong. They left me in the clinic full of cynical and motherfucking bureaucrats. And the other kind of dingbats are living on the tracks, but the tracks in my arm. Said it all depends on which side the tracks you're on. So telling me what to wear and telling me cut my hair and trying to convince me that they really, really care about my health and about my wealth. But still they built their stealth, cause everybody's just looking out for that. So then I ask him, can I have a clean needle? He say, hell no. That's illegal, it's a crime. Yeah. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. To be black in America, come on, y'all. Brothers in the poorhouse who can't afford more house. Politicians nervous, it's the only free service they provide. You wanna go inside, there's a hot meal waiting for it. A deal we can score you on a bed for a night or two, or 3 or 4 months. They say they locking us up in a cell to protect us from ourselves. It smells like they got another plan in storehouse, or should I say warehouse, full of niggas and other misfits that couldn't turn tricks in the courthouse. Nah, it's a justice whorehouse, and it's a crime. To be broke in America, say it's a crime. Yeah, to be broke in America, come on, y'all. Take a sample, there's no need to play it backwards if you wanna hear the devil. Cause music's not the problem, it didn't cause a bombing. But maybe they say listen to the songs of my people starving. Ooh yeah, cause it's a crime, yeah. Yeah.
different. Say it's a crime to be a woman. Say it's a crime to have AIDS. And it's a crime to be broke. And it's a crime to smoke weed. You know what I'm talking about? And it's a crime.
And that was another one from Skidmark Bob's Homeless, or actually Houseless, USA selection, Crime to be Broken America, Michael Franti. Okay, I have that right. Yeah. I just got word that Uncle Dennis is not going to be in tonight. He is very ill. He may even be in the hospital. I'm not sure. I wasn't quite clear on that message. I did talk to Dennis earlier. He didn't sound good. He's been sick for at least a week, and we'd hoped to have a discussion between him and Dan Bronson, who has been raising issues around the Board of Permit Appeals, which the Board of Supervisors killed when it tried to oversee in stricter fashion the planning department of the county, which is responsible to some extent for red tags and other decisions which have provoked some controversy. And I called up Dan earlier because I needed to get some specifics about the particulars of the kinds of complaints that brought many, many people to the Board of Supervisors meetings last year, angry people, angry with the board, angry with the planning department, angry that the Board of Permit Appeals had been just sort of first blocked and then, well, first ignored, and then blocked and then abolished by the Neil Coonerty's Board of Supervisors. And I can't really provide you with the kind of debate that I'd like to, because Dan has not provided me with the specifics. He's really working hard, and he apparently has all kinds of business problems he's having too. This is not the best economy to be trying to spend a lot of time on extracurricular activities. And of course, Uncle Dennis is really under the weather. I am going to spend a little more time than usual on this show, with Skidmark Bob's permission, because I have stuff I need to play, and I don't think Uncle Dennis has a show ready. At least Skidmark doesn't know where that is, and I don't either. I'm going to look around and see if I can find something. But for all you Cream to the Dregs fans, I apologize that we don't have that ready. I'm sorry that Uncle Dennis isn't here in the studio and his substitute can't make it either. We will certainly be trying to put on some kind of music, but I'm going to go long so I can get some tape done with the permission of the substitute host, Skidmark Bob. So that's what's coming up. Let's hear a few more street interviews and maybe a few of your calls at 427-3772. And I think we may need to switch to a different tape here and continue with our researches. This is something that I actually hoped to play last Sunday, and it's the some conversations prior to Wes Modes' hearing at the courthouse. Wes Modes is an activist who has been involved with projects such as the Sub Rosa Cafe, which provides all kinds of opportunities for homeless and poor people to hang out, cheap coffee, computer access, shelter from a storm when it's raining, literature to read. And there have been problems at the Sub Rosa, too, in terms, as there is with any business, which, you know, is fundamentally part of a bourgeois scene. But Wes has been involved with that. He's been involved with organizing the DIY Last Night Parade over in the past years. That's a big parade that initially the police, as you heard Steve, our earlier guest, talk about, tried to infiltrate improperly, illegally, and caused the police department some serious embarrassment when he got the ACLU involved in demanding a thorough investigation, and they just investigated themselves, and that was exposed as completely inadequate. Anyway, he also has been involved with defending the Drum Circle 2 years ago when the Drum Circle was attacked by the police department, again, under the able leadership of Sergeant Harms, who he was then accused, Wes Modes, of, he was accused of battering a police officer and a variety of minor infractions from the week before that they had waiting for him in a squad car to charge him with, and hence either intimidate him away or drag him away. But the police provoked a near riot on September 17, 2008. I was there by, again, Harms' determination to essentially shut down the drum circle. He didn't go in specifically saying we're shutting it down, but the increased police surveillance, the wire, the plastic green mesh around the circle, the harassment of Food Not Bombs activist Jack Russ, the determination to show police authority and force in that situation, which I think provoked a near riot there. And they brought all kinds of policemen in. You'll see there's a very famous photo now, which is on the internet on IndieBay, which shows a picture of a police officer with a riot gun. And that was actually taken from that event. And you can read about it and read my extensive coverage of the whole drum circle controversy in 2008 by going to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz and searching for Norse, N-O-R-S-E, and you'll get a whole series of older stories about that issue. So anyway, Wes, as I've talked about before, and as actually came out in the Sentinel a couple days ago, yesterday, finally the Sentinel on a back page came out with a story about this trial, which we're now going to hear some discussion of, and you'll actually hear, rather than me describe it several times over, I think there's a discussion of it in the midst of this tape, but it's fundamentally harassment of activists, and partially because of Wes's association with the Sub Rosa Cafe, where he's been a big supporter of it, an organizer there. And the Sub Rosa Cafe, has a lot of anarchist literature, and they blame another group of people who they call anarchists, who are window breakers on May 1st for breaking windows, properly so, although they don't know who they are, and they want to just find some victims, and they're suspicious of many of the Sentinel, Take Back Santa Cruz, City Council, Mayor Rotkin, you name it, they all seem to have, as my button said, there's a button that said, let's blame Wes, and something to that effect. In any case, here's the group of about 15 or 20 people showed up at the courthouse to support him, and he went on trial on some infractions that we're going to hear. I tried to get the trial recorded. I was blocked by the the judge in question, Judge, I think it was Burdick, who was the judge. Anyway, let's hear some of the chatter around all this. And Wes, in a move that annoyed me, said he declined being recorded. But, of course, he's in a public place, and he can't really decline being recorded. But as a courtesy, I didn't record him. I don't know if I would give him that same courtesy again. I don't, he's a public figure. He's talking right before his trial, and he's speaking publicly, so he can't really decline to be recorded. But in this one instance, I turned off my tape recorder. So we had the Raging Grannies, a group there in front of the courthouse. This was, around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in front of the courthouse? Or was it in the morning? It was sometime on Friday. And let's hear what happened. This is Jonathan Gettleman, Wes Mode's attorney, who did some fancy legal arguing in court and describes what Wes is charged with.
It means more philosophically than it does legally, except for the fact that it happens to be linked to another case that could have more serious repercussions.
But aren't infractions the way they're skirting, like, juries and any kind of visual?
Yeah, but the reason that they're skirting that is because the maximum punishment you can get is $250 fine. So in the end of the day, I mean, they're not skirting juries in a manner like in another case that I have, somebody can go to jail over it or something of that sort. So. But the fact that it is linked to this other action and it could potentially be considered some violation of the law.
What Jonathan Gettleman is talking about here, and you can read my whole description of the the West Modes, the attack on this activist West Modes online at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and just Google for West Modes and then Robert Norris, and you'll get my story. Is that the Modes is did a plea settlement bargain sentencing, which the DA is now trying to challenge by saying he broke a law because he supposedly walked in a parade on New Year's Eve, and that's what that's about.
Sort of thing. It makes it somewhat significant. But I think the most significant part about it is the whole case is just relates to the trying to squelch free speech and expression and fit it into a very narrow box of parameters. And we're going to try to pry it on open and we'll see what happens.
Hi, this is Jonathan Gettleman, attorney for West Modes. I'm here at the courthouse. It's about 10 after 1 on May 28th, and we have about 15 or 20 people here now, including the defendant, West Modes. Jonathan is attorney. Other attorney, Ed Fry, Drum Circle Dave, former mayor and council member Scott Kennedy, Grant Wilson, Sherry Connable, the Raging Grannies, a number of them, former head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, Linda LeMaster, and a whole bunch of people, soup criminal and, I should say, song criminal, Becky Johnson, who has been convicted previously of singing sinister sidewalk songs downtown, and all the way over from San Jose, Dangerous John Teelking has come to give support. There are a couple of the Huff members here from Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom as well. And you heard the beginning of West Mode's statement. He didn't want to be interviewed. For those of you who aren't savvy in this matter, that was a courtesy that I provided. He doesn't have any option when he's speaking in a public place. But as a friendly media person, I'm interested in being, well, not creating an incident here. So we didn't record a statement, which largely had, you could find the elements of that statement online on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz in the calendar event for today, which talks about the trial, which actually I wrote. Well, we're talking to some of the onlookers here. Why are you here, sir?
Oh, I'm here because, you know, the world needs love, and it needs... I think it's
personal,
like,
relationship
what needs now. It's love, sweet love.
You have with West Mode? Is that what you're saying here? Are you revealing a relationship?
No. It's the only thing that there's just one of.
Oh, dear. It sounds like you're a song.
But anyway, there's a bunch of drummers, so there's not just one.
What's their name, sir?
So we've had a couple of calls that suggest that my machine is having problems here. And it seems to be there's another me in the studio as well, but that's another story. I really apologize for folks for this. The tape recorder, maybe could be it wasn't plugged in all the way. Maybe that's why it's inaudible. Hey, thank you, callers, for calling in and advising me that things aren't as they should be. Also, I have good news for Uncle Dennis fans. And bad news for Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, folks. This is not going to be an extended version because We have a man who's valiantly pinch hitting for Uncle Dennis. He's going to be here in a moment and take over the mic, and I'm losing my chance for a long show. You know how it is. It happens that way sometimes, and you got to go with the flow here. So I will be back on Sunday with a longer show with guests Mike Rhodes from Fresno. Also, I think I have another guest who will be calling in or coming in. But I will have to check on that, and hopefully I'll have a better connection with this tape recorder. My apologies to all you listeners. Thank you for hanging in there, and thank you for calling in. It's really important because that way we have less of that and more actually audible stuff. We're going to go out on a quickie here and turn the mic over to a man who is going to actually provide us with some real decent 70s music, perhaps 60s music. 67. He's going to do it, so that's going to happen.
The last poor man on a poor man's vacation. And they cuffed him and they confiscated his stuff. And they dragged this black ass down to the station and said, "Okay, streets are safe now. All your pretty white children can come out and see Spider Run." And they came out of their houses and they looked around. Didn't see no one in my country. 'Tis of they to take swings at each other on talk show TV. Why don't you just go ahead and turn off the sun? 'Cause we'll never live long enough undo everything they've done to you. Undo everything they've done. Bearded ladies, but it's not the same going town to town. sentence, they put everyone in jail except the Cleavers and the Bradys. And my country, 'tis of thee to take swing at each other on the talk show TV. Why don't you just go ahead and turn off the sun? 'Cause we'll never live long enough to undo everything they've done to you.
From the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dregs. From the cream to the dregs. It's every Thursday night from 8 to 11. From the cream to the dregs. Check it out, it's old-time music, new-time music, it's mostly fun, and it's just for you, right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The Free Radio Station.
Take this, brother, may it serve you well.